Blog Talk Radio.
We get a lot of people.
Okay. So yours is the only life.
Yeah, just hang
we
that
have,
one up.
You have reached a mental health crisis.
Give me that one.
This is through Blog Talk Radio. This is Paulette Young speaking. We have another hot topic tonight. We're going to talk about mentally ill in prison. And for some of you, I can hear like an echo. So trying not where we don't, where we won't have the echoing sound, and also where we no background noise. It's a live recording, and it will interfere with the recording. So these are the questions I have present. Why are people with mental illness placed in prison when they commit a crime? Should our system have another solution? The help they need. What type of help do the mentally ill receive while in prison? Join us tonight to explore the answers to these questions. I'm your host, Paulette Young, and we're being joined by Selena Lindsay, Phyllis McNeil, also Mr. Arcadio, and also James Vegas, and a few others. Okay, I'm not sure some of the ones that I see on the board if they're going to be talking or not, but I see someone from the 951-272 area. Did you want to be able to talk tonight or no?
That's Phyllis.
No.
Who's that one? Who's the 272?
That's Phyllis, 272-372-3766.
Yeah.
That's Phyllis and my guest.
Okay. I have someone from the 310-493. Did you want to identify
yourself?
Phillipa.
That's
Phillipa. Thank you. All right. Then I have someone from the 805-208. Did you want to identify yourself?
Teresa Owens.
Hi, Teresa. And then I have Selena on the line. And then I also have someone from the 951-679. Want to identify yourself? You don't have to.
Yes, this is Gloria Baxter.
Oh, hi, Gloria. Okay.
Hi.
A hot topic, and quite a few things are going to be said tonight. There are some of you on the line that is very, very, very familiar with the prison system and why some of these people that are in there that are mentally ill shouldn't have been there in the first place. So I'm not sure who wants to go first, but what I wanted to know, why are people with mental illness placed in prison in the first place? Which one of you want to tackle that question?
Okay, this is Phyllis from Straight Talk Program. I'll tackle that one since I work inside the juvenile system and the adult system. You know what? If they put people in with mental illness, they should look at these individual people and put them in a treatment facility versus putting them in county jail or prison, because we're not really helping them. They're getting sicker and sicker, and sometimes they don't come out of that mindset they're in, mental illness, to get so sick. I have one guy right now. He's a guest of mine, our cardio. They put him in a hole for 20 years in the SHU program. 20 years in a hole himself. I mean, for his mind to come out intact, that was nothing but the grace of God. Okay, you want to?
My name is Arcadio. I was in prison for 32 years, and of those 32 years, I spent 20 in solitary confinement. Why they put people there, that was your initial question. People with mental illness act out. They don't conform. So they get in altercations, they have disputes with officers, so they send them to the SHU. When I was in the SHU, there was people there that should not have been there. They would scream all day long, they would wipe feces all over themselves. I mean, there was every day there was stuff going on with people with mental illness because they didn't have the means to deal with them or didn't want to or didn't know how to deal with people with mental illness. That was my personal experience.
Wow. So did anyone else want to tackle that's on the line right now? The other thing, I love...
This is Teresa. Like the gentleman said, people who have mental illness do act out. But from the experiences that I have with my son, who is afflicted with mental illness, even though you may, and as his mother, I was an advocate, I would call, and tell them that he has a mental illness. He needs to be separated from the other prisoners, so that he does not get into further trouble. And they had no ear to hear me. They just want him out of the way, out of the, public, and out of sight and out of mind. And if the person doesn't have an advocate outside who's fighting for them and making themselves a nuisance to the system, they will get lost.
This is Arcadio again. I wanted to add that these people with mental illness, the conditions in the solitary confinement were awful. It was like you didn't know it was there. Like, there was no windows. Every time you come out that cell, you come out with waist chains, ankle chains. Your property is destroyed every day. So whatever problems they had when they came in were not made any better. They were made much, much worse. I had some of these guys come by my cell with feces and urine and cups and throw it on me. Just, I don't know why, but they did. That's just something that they did. So it just got worse as time went on.
That's a tragic. So should our system have another solution?
Yes, they should. We should. People with mental illness, they should be in treatment centers, maybe in the community where they can receive treatment, get on their psychotropic medication, the right type of psychotropic medication for their mental illness diagnosis. Because sometimes when they're in prison, they don't care what kind of medicine they give them. They overdose. They might put them on some medication. They don't care. Some of those psychiatrists in there probably need medication themselves. They just don't have no concern, and sometimes they be over-medicated or they be on the wrong medication, which make them even worse. So we really need, our solution is to get them in facilities outside of the prison settings. That's a lot of places in California where they have lockdown mental health facilities where they can get treatment by people who specialize in that field. Get them in the right therapy, on the right medication, and have them under better living conditions. Because if they are already traumatized and they're in that cell, it's no windows, they stripped of everything in there. And they treat them like animals, so their mental illness get even worse and worse. They're not getting any better. We're wasting our tax money, taxpayers' money. It costs over $72,000 a year to incarcerate somebody. We're not talking about the one with mental illness. That takes it up probably another $15,000, $20,000 more because they're under more supervision.
Okay, mm-hmm. You mentioned that there are facilities that we can place them in?
Yeah, there's some facilities in the community now that they will deal with people that are supposed to have a prison sentence, prison term, but instead of going to prison, they go to a mental health facility where it's locked down. They get the proper treatment. They have a psychiatrist to see them. They have a therapist to see them. They in groups. They're dealing with their mental illness, so they won't get even worse. They're getting better. Yes.
Are there enough facilities like that throughout?
No, there's not enough facilities. We need more facilities in our community. More facilities like that. It's not enough to house all the people that's in prison. It's not enough. And even with the youth, there's a lot of youth out there need to be in those facilities as well. We need youth facilities as well. They're traumatized in prison.
So you've answered one of the questions that they don't get the help in prison at all?
No, they don't get the help. Those prison guards, they could care. Some of them, they got some good ones in there, but then they got some in there, they really don't care. And what they need to do, the community needs to have a community advisor committee to go in there in the prison and go in there and visit those inmates and talk to them one-on-one to see what's actually going on in those prison settings. Because we're going to keep wasting our money. We're paying a lot of money for the staff salaries and our taxpayer money. It's just we're not getting any returns on our money as far as rehabilitating those inmates in there with mental illness. They become
more. Okay, so while in prison, what type of help do the mentally ill receive while they're in prison?
Very little. You want to comment on that?
I know that in the SHU, in the Security Housing Unit of Pelican Bay, that's where I spent 20 years, there was absolutely nothing done for them. I mean, they were acting out, but because of the way these places are constructed, you know, they have a pod, what they call a pod. It's a small structure. There's four cells on the bottom, four cells on top, and everything is closed off. So these guys rant and rave, and they just don't pay attention. They don't come and talk to them. They don't take them to see the doctor. They don't take them to see the psychiatrist. They just let them do whatever they're going to do in that cell, and they close all the windows so they don't have to hear them.
Oh, okay. Bye.
Wow.
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, I've seen, I mean, every day. And some of these people, like I said, act out. And some of these, and like Phyllis said, not all the correction officers are bad, but there are some that play games. Like they'll open two doors at the same time with a mentally ill person. And so they get attacked, or they'll attack people. There's physical violence, and then there's they're quick to shoot. They have a 37-millimeter stun gun, Mini 14, and they're just, I mean, they're the ones that open the doors supposedly by mistake, and then they shoot. So, I mean,
and when
I
that happens, what's done about it?
Pardon?
When that happens, what's done about it?
Well, I mean, they'll write the reports, but a lot of the times these people have no contact with their families. I mean, you know, there are people that have slipped through the cracks. They're usually not writing to anybody because either their mental illness doesn't allow them to, or they've been cut off by their families. Their families are fed up with them. They go to prison and they're forgotten. They're forgotten by their families. They're forgotten by society. And the CDCR, they just try to keep them away and just, like, pretend they're not there or pretend they don't need help. I mean, yeah, I mean, there's no watchdogs on the reports. They doctor them, they fix them, they do all that. And I mean, I went in, I don't know. I mean, I was 20 years in security housing, and there's stuff I'm still carrying with me. I mean, I came out with no kind of special training. I'm 67 years old, no job opportunities, and there are issues I'm dealing with, like being out in open spaces. Being in crowds, I get very, very nervous and anxious when I'm in crowds. And those are things that were never treated, and I really didn't know the extent of them until I came out here. You know, I'm not really antisocial, but it's hard for me to make friends, to talk to people, you know, face-to-face. So even myself, I'm dealing with stuff like that, and when I bring it up to the parole officer, they'll send me to the psych, and I'll have an interview, and they're like, oh, well, you know, there's not too much I can do. I can put you on heavy psych medication, and that's not what I'm looking for, you know? So I don't know the answer. There's a whole lot of questions. There's a whole lot of bad stuff going on. I don't know what the solution is, but I think you need groups of watchdogs to monitor this stuff, you know, to go in the prisons, because every time people go in the prisons, they know beforehand that they're going in, and they fix everything up so it looks rosy and nice and all that. So I don't know. I don't know the answers, but there is a problem.
So when people go in, there's what are they conditioning the prisoners to be a certain way when they come,
They know where to take them. First of all, they're not going to take them to where a place where a guy is acting out. They're not going to do that. They're going to handpick a unit to take them in. They're going to know they're coming in before they come in, because you have to go through all these checkpoints to get into a place like Pelican Bay SHU. So by the time they get there, they're not going to see the real deal. They're going to see what the CDCR wants them to see. And it's all like, oh, perfect. It's all nice, you know, but it's not nice. It's a bad, bad place. It's doing more damage than good.
Wow. I want to tackle the topic there are more mentally ill people in jails and prisons than in hospitals. How do anybody want to talk about that?
This is Phyllis. Yes, there are more people with mental illness. When you go to prison and when you go to jail, if you don't have mental illness when you go in there, more than likely, if you treat it really bad, and more than likely you are going to be treated really bad, you come out with some form of mental illness. Or you might have an offset while you're in there, you're not properly diagnosed, so you're going to come out of there even worse when you come back in the community. There's not a lot of resources when they parole you into the community. You get a parole officer. They could care less. All they want you to do for them, you come in there for them to meet their specs. You come in there and report. They don't care about you being sick or whatnot. And then they release you without your medication. The psychotropic medication, they release the inmates without their medication, and that might take them about 2 or 3 months to get a site visit to get them their medication. And some of them are on the wrong medication. We got to have some people held accountable for giving them their medication, getting them in treatment programs once they parole, as well as inside, also.
Sounds like there needs to be work done prior to the person exiting the prison then.
Yes.
Sounds like there's no program. Or whatever they have, it's not an exiting program.
No, and then they let them out. They become homeless. They don't have nowhere to stay. And then their mental illness get even worse when they get out, and then they reoffend. They'll go out and commit a robbery. Don't even know they robbed somebody. They'll stay right there till the police come and get them, or they'll do another robbery. They don't. Their mind is gone. They're not in their right set of mind when they come out of that prison, some of them. Yes.
Wow.
Majority of them, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Okay, for those that are joining us for the first time, we're talking about mental illness in the prison. Why are so many that are being placed in prisons that are mentally ill, should they even be there? And it seems like there's an overwhelming answer. No, they shouldn't be there. There are a few facilities. I don't think there's many. I didn't even know there was even one that they can go to where they're locked down, as Phyllis has said, but they're getting treatment. They have a trained psychologist, psychiatrist, their meds, and trying to integrate them back into society. It sounds like something like that should be done prior to them even leaving prison. They should have a place, or they leave prison, but they have a place like that to go. But it sounds like there's not enough facilities like that. And,
there's one in Pomona. I don't know what the name of it, but one of my speaker, her son, she fought for her son because they was going to send him back to prison. He'd been arrested 43 times in and out of that revolving door. But she said enough is enough. She fought for her son. As a result, her son got sentencing outside of the prison in a mental health facility in Pomona, and he's doing great over there. He's getting the treatment. He's going to go through a year treatment there, then he's going to go through another treatment, and when he's ready, he'll be living on his own when they think he's ready. But he's making a lot of progress because he's in a loving and nurturing environment where he's getting his treatment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his treatment, his core problems are being addressed. What causes offset, you know, his mental illness? He had a lot of traumatic experiences as a kid, and then it went into his adult life. And so she fought for her son. The judge gave her, granted her her wish to get her son not in prison, not committed to a prison term, but committed to mental health treatment versus going into those walls again.
Okay, so once they get there in a treatment place, how long do they stay there?
Well, it just depends. It depends on how long their prison term is. They have to go through a set of treatment plans. And once they address all their treatment plans, they go to the next stage. Like, he's going to be in there until November. He's going to be in this lockdown facility in Pomona until November. And then after November, he'll go to another phase of treatment, then another phase. I don't know how many years that he has to do as far as his prison term, but he will not be going behind bars. His treatment, his term would be treatment versus locking him up behind those bars, because that's not helping him at all. Yes. Oh. If you guys look him up on YouTube, you can look that story up. His name is Antonio Carrion. You look him up on the YouTube and the YouTube video. They have a story about his episode with the Justice Department having an opportunity versus going to prison. They put him in treatment facility, and he's doing wonderful things in there. Antonio, his last name is Carrion, C-A-R-R-I-O-N. He's on YouTube video. He's a documentary, part one, and they're going to be doing another documentary on him, part two. His mother is a part of the Straight Talk program. She's one of my speakers. She's been there on my speaking program since 1999. Yeah, you guys,
right.
He was, yeah, it's a good story. He had a promising career, a football career, but at the high school level, it got shattered. His dream got shattered because that brought on his onset mental illness. Mm-hmm.
So when he was in high school, did they know he had mental illness? Or
they knew something was wrong with him, but they didn't know it until he was in Dorsey High School. You read that story, you'll be impressed. A lot of people know him. He was a well-known football player from Dorsey High School. But the coach knew something. He was having problems, family problems, because his mother was incarcerated. So he was left with his grandmother to raise him. So they didn't know how to deal with people, the family with mental illness. So he had to wait till his mother got out of prison to, you know, to start getting some help, because the mother said, oh, God, I'm faced with my son when I get out, you know. And then she lost her daughter while she was in prison, too, at 14. So she lost two kids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But Antonio's coming back. He's doing real well over there in Pomona at that facility. But there's more facilities out there, but there's not enough facilities. And when you talk about facilities, we need good facilities, because a lot of people can open up their door, but do they really care about these people? Are they just getting a paycheck to warehouse them too? You see?
Right.
That's a good facility where he's at. That's an outstanding facility.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah.
What I'm curious if anyone knows why there was an article that Arizona and Nevada has 10 times more mentally ill in prison than in hospitals. Why are those two places higher than other places?
You said Arizona and what other place?
Yes, with Fathers and Families Coach America. Arizona has a lot of private prisons, and one of it's called CCA, or it used to be CCA and GEO. In fact, overwhelmingly. And they don't do a lot of programming. And programming, like Phyllis, would probably make sure that someone who's coming out, when they have a pre-release plan, would have a plan from in and out for programming, but it doesn't really happen in the private prisons. And they see them as dollar bills walking the yard, not as human beings.
Wow, so there needs to be a correction in those two states, and that takes...
Well, it's a business.
CCA came out of Australia and runs
most of the prisons now. And because it's about money, interventions cost a lot.
Okay, Selena, you were going to comment on something that James just said.
Virtually, he's reiterating some of the same things I'm going to say, which Phillips touched on it. And some of the other things is, first of all, prisons are privatized. They're not necessarily, these are not people that work for the United States or any of that. They're a private system. People own these guards that work there. It's privatized, and they do it because of one reason, money. And in the first place, they cannot control normal prisoners either. They're making an absolute mess of it. The whole box of rocks needs to be shook up. And just as Phyllis reiterated, somebody and people and the taxpayers, they need to look into the system, because they're not doing what they're supposed to do. And it's all about the money. That's what it's about. They take these individuals and they're about making a dollar bill. And they're doing one thing, just like she said, they're warehousing flesh. That's what they're doing. They're not interested in trying to fix it. And in order for us to fix it, and for taxpayers to fix it, first, they need to do what they're doing. If you're within the sound or the voice of listening to this radio, listen to this program and understand. These people don't care about these human beings to begin with.
Yeah, we better take it very serious. Every time I cut on the TV, someone, some kid or some adult, have took their life. A lot of people have taken their life. They're committing suicide. Mental illness is on the rise. Mental illness is on the rise to our little kids. We got kids suffering from mental illness as young as probably 9 and 5 years old on up. You know, these kids are taking their lives. The adults are taking their lives, and so we got a serious problem going on. We got to start caring about people. You know, it's all about the dollar. We treat these people like animals. What do you expect when they get out or when they're on the streets? You know, the people, these kids are committed, they're going to the schools, shooting up people. They have mental illness. Nobody is looking into that. The signs, I'm sure they give you signs, but we don't pay attention to the warning signs
on the media stuff like that. Part of the problem is no one's trained to recognize that there's a problem. I know there's Tri-City had, I don't know how often they run it, but they had mental health or mental illness first aid so that people are trained to recognize that there is a problem. That's not, like, people are required to take CPR first aid, but not a mental health first aid. So if you don't have the tools and what to do or what to look for, then that's part of the problem, too. There's just not enough of that done.
Well, part of the problem is just like what Phyllis was saying in the first place. That's like talking about the rains flooding out these cities when they don't build the gutters or they don't build the system in the first place to handle the water. And now that the water is running out of the sea, which is these mentally ill people, they are not putting the money there. The government is playing games, and they're playing games with a tremendous amount of money. Don't tell me a guard that goes in with starting pay $59,000 and they make $80,000, and then some of these guys are making $100,000. This is a money-orientated system.
That's what it is. Those guards are for the state, working for the Department of Correction. They make some good money. They make more than the teachers make.
Absolutely. And so that's what they're doing. And another lady that I work for, her name is Diane Leitiker, and she runs something called Kids Off the Block, KOB. And KOB is about low-income kids that are, you know, into gangs, drugs, truancy, violence, and, you know, in the juvenile justice system. Now, 14,000 kids have been through this cotton picking thing. And you can go to that thing on YouTube and see what that's all about. You know, www.kidsofftheblock.us. Or you can go, again, on YouTube, and you'll see it. Her name, again, is Diane Leitiker. And this is what it's all about. These kids that are inside of the justice system with some of everything, you know, everything from mental problems, because when you're acting mentally ill in school, well, the best thing for you is to lock them up and turn out the lights. That's what they do.
Because they don't know what to
do. So much money for keeping a person behind bars. They're not fixing anything.
Yeah,
and
we're wasting a lot of money.
Teresa, one thing that I keep hearing is about the money. And I think that they are keeping these people in prison. They are spending money on them. They are spending money on the guards. But I tell you, the government knows that they're spending a lot less money locking these people up like animals than it would take to send them to facilities where they would get medical care, which is far more expensive than prison. They are not willing to spend the money that it takes to treat them. They would much rather corral them and maybe give them a generic pill, a placebo. You don't even know what they're getting in there. They may be getting a sugar pill when they're charging the government for psychotropic drugs. You don't know. But they're far more likely to spend the money putting them in a cage than they are putting them in a hospital bed where they need to be. You know, they're just not willing to spend that kind of money, and they don't care that much about our people. They just don't.
Well, this is where I look at it. Is it they don't want to spend the money, or is there a fight for where the money's going to go? You have a business. This one has a business. You're going to fight over where that money's going to go. Who has the power? Does the private sector that owns those prisons have the power? And that's why it's the way it is? Or is it something else?
Yeah, this is Arcadio again, and I have to say that, you know, as hopeless as it sounds, it's not really hopeless if we all do our little part, like what we're doing right now, talking about it. I'm living at a room and board, and all the people, there's 10 people there, and they all have mental health issues, make sure that they're well-fed. I listen to them, and when they have these episodes, I don't take it personally. I see them as God's children, and it's my job to love them, and that's all. I think if love comes into the equation and we really care, we put our hearts into looking out for people, each of us can put our little grain of salt in and start working at a big solution. We have to start small, each of us as individuals doing our part. I've been out a year and a half. And I'm not going to say it's been easy because there's issues I'm dealing with too, but by the grace and mercy of God, I'm still here. I'm working, and things are looking good for me.
Praise God for that.
Yes.
You're one of the ones
I applaud you.
So that's a blessing.
And if you look at it, and we start investing our money the right way, start getting these people treatment, we'll save a lot of money in the end because they won't keep reoffending. Just think, every year we keep a prisoner incarcerated. That's over $72,000 a year. Just think, if we invest half of that money in treatment facilities, they will not keep reoffending. You know, so we have to look at that. We need some research and studies done in those areas. It's probably more than likely once they get themselves treated and get on their medication, stabilized, and they probably won't be going in and out that revolving door. But the reason why they're going in and out so much, they're not never being treated. This Antonio was in jail 43 times, and now his mother fought for him. Now they're looking at it, and they're getting him treatment. Well, look how much money we didn't spend on this kid when nobody wanted to hear that he needed treatment.
And all of that more interested in making
someone,
a dollar bill off.
When you get treatment, the private sector is not going to benefit.
Well, as long as we're looking at these people not being human beings, what do we expect? We treat people like animals and whatnot, not treat them like people. You know, it's just horrible the way we look at people these days.
Well,
Anybody can found
a home. All you gotta be is be a dog. If you're a dog and you're in the street, the dog has found a home. The dog is taken care of in a humane way.
That's
right.
But
they don't allow that same dignity to a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And they send that dog immediately to a veterinarian to assess. They give a complete assessment on a dog.
There's a lot of people locked behind bars. Can do a lot better if we would just invest our time. You could still hold them accountable and get them into the treatment they need, whether it be mental illness, substance abuse, or just, you know, into not going in and out of that revolving door like Straight Talk. We got a high success rate. You know, I got people on my program that suffer from mental illness. I got some people that don't, but I make sure that they get into some good treatment. So they won't reoffend, you know. They got people that got their master's. One guy got his PhD. We got some people that got their undergrad. You know, we got people in the program that never touched their feet in the prison system. But we have one goal in common, to help each other in the community, you know.
Okay,
so it's all about how we look at people, you know.
Your program that you talk about, Phyllis, is it used statewide or?
Well, my program that I'm talking about, the State Talk program, you talk about the program that I birthed in 1990?
Right, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's a program that's covering the Southern California area.
Does it cover Northern California?
No, I need some public funds. I need funds. If anybody listening, know anybody that would love to give out, write a check to Straight Talk. We do some good things in the community. I have depleted all my funds. We're talking about retirement savings for 29 years. I'm looking for some money, somebody to donate. We need sponsorship because I have a high success rate of people that are in my program. They're doing good things. They're paying it forward in the community.
Yes, this is Arcadio, and I want to speak on that, on what Phyllis has done for me personally. She was an anchor. She's been my mentor. She's my sister in Christ, and she was there for me when my own family wasn't there. And she has supported me. She's encouraged me. She's kept up with my progress. She has been my guardian angel. So just having people like that and this kind of program is doing wonders, because I go to parole meetings. They have lifer meetings once a month, and all they do is like feed you, bring pizzas in, and talk about, well, we could put you to work picking up trash on the side of the road. You know, that's a job, but come on, who wants to do that? You know, I mean, we're here. We want real jobs. We want living wages, you know, and so, you know, and then if you have mental illness, oh, man, what are you going to do? You end up homeless. So we need a lot of people like Phyllis, and we need her program to grow, like what you were just asking, if it's in other places. We need to make sure that Phyllis's program does not die, that it grows and expands, because it has done so much for me. It's kept me a productive, God-fearing man all this time I've been out, well, a year and a half, which is not a long time, after 32 years in prison. But she has been a godsend.
Praise God for that.
Yeah, we just need some genuine people, because even with my own personal life, it was two guardian angels that helped me. I could have been in prison right today, but I'm talking about when you have genuine people helping you, they don't look at you as a number or a piece of trouble. They look at you as a human being. They could still hold you accountable where you don't be a risk to the community or anything like that. Dealing with the core problem, what is making you act the way you act? We got to dig deep into these people. You know, that's all we're doing is wasting money. So anybody listening to this program, if you want to donate, you can go to my website. My website is www.S for Straight, T for Talk, P for Program, I for Ice, N for Nancy, C for Christ, O for Ox, R for Revelation, and G for God. Now, if I said it too fast, just Google Straight Talk Program and the city of Corona or Norco and everything that come up about Straight Talk.
One of the things about Phyllis is James Rodriguez, the Fathers and Families Coalition of America. She's one of our affiliates in Corona, but she's more than that. She's also an exceptional professional. Whenever we would hold our national conference, and she couldn't come the last couple of years, but her rooms were packed, because she also brings people who have gone through the program. Instead of just talking about a model, you live the model while you see her, and she's just an exceptional role model. And one of the things, even for my daughter, when my daughter was getting her black belt in karate, I said, do you know Miss Phyllis is a, I believe, fourth degree black belt? And she said, really? And that also became an instant spark in her eyes to go ahead and complete the process. And I said, now you see your belt hanging on the wall with your name, and maybe one day when you get older, you'll go back like Miss Phyllis and go on. Well, my daughter has been blessed to hang with Phyllis and hang out in different formats. And my daughter has always thought really high of her. And that's the kind, from little kids through senior citizens the depth of this person, who is not just a leader of an organization. She's got her master's of social work. She's been licensed. She's a professional. And everything she does is in excellence in her personal life, in her business, and in her walk. Now, is it perfection? No one's perfect. But I've never met someone who could have just said, I'm going to be about myself, keep my money, and I'm not going to invest it in other people. Maybe I'll give my 10% to church. She's done the opposite. She probably keeps less than what she invests into others' lives. And so that's why anyone that does get this really should consider a monthly donation so that it goes, it's not going to go into her pocket. It really is going to go to help kids whenever she goes and does some speaking engagement to bring in other speakers of encouragement. This is a tremendous program and led by the vision that she was given to do this. And that's why I'm glad that she's asking for people for contributions, because I think it's critical for the community. And she's probably the only one with a program like that, because she slays the dragon.
Praise God, Phyllis, that we have
yes.
you on board.
Yeah, they call me the
like
dragon slayer.
Program needs spread further than Southern California. It should
yeah,
be
I
in
want
every,
it, you know,
it
I'm
like
getting
you
up
have
to
a
an
model
age.
That's much needed.
Yeah, I'm getting up there in age, and I'm pushing it really hard for this program to be here when I'm not even here. 2019, I'm pushing it. I'm a 50-degree black belt, and I one day I want to get back in the ring. I love fighting only in the ring because I love it. You know, I was a fighter before I got into karate, but I love what I do, and I try to do whatever I set out to do, I try to do it to my best of my ability. Because I had two people in my life, my guardian angels, they helped me. And I wouldn't be sitting here today. I'd probably be in jail or somewhere else. But these two ladies, they invested in me. And that's all I'm doing, investing in people. I have some great people in my program. People that no longer go in and out that revolving door. Some people have never been in that revolving door. But we work as a team. We're a family program based on faith, God. You know, because it's not me. God assigned me to this job, and I'm going to do it well. Mm-hmm.
And I pray that through this broadcast and other means that the word gets out. You have a program. Why reinvent the wheel when it's already been invented? So it's just a matter of people like myself and others never knew a program like yours even exists. It's good that Southern California knows, but it would be even better when Northern California knows about it, and even better when state by state they know about your program, because this is much needed, and just having the few people you've had on the air giving their own testimony of what your program has done for them, and they're not going back to prison because of having a program like yours. So I think it's just a matter of time, but it just somehow, through all the connections, I look for your program to, it needs to go worldwide. Why not?
Yeah, it will. It's going
to
go.
It does.
2019 is my year. I'm going to fly like an eagle.
You are an eagle.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to fly. I'm ready. Yeah,
so
I just feel
so
grateful.
All of those are out there listening, because there's quite a few listeners. I know I can't bring in all the people that are numbers that are showing on the board, but if anybody else want to contribute or say what you think is a solution, or you want to say something to Phyllis or James or Selena or some of the people that's given their talk on this topic, feel free to go ahead, but you have to press 1 or we won't hear you.
This is Philippa Johnson, and I just would like to say that, you know, mental health often comes, it starts a lot of times in the family, and it's difficult for parents to recognize what they can do to help their children as it relates to mental health. I'm a grandmother that's dealing with a granddaughter that's dealing with mental health, and I will say that Phyllis...
Somebody. If you can quiet your background, go ahead. Go ahead.
Are you talking to me?
No, your background's fine, but someone else on the line, it's noisy.
Okay. And I just wanted to say that I appreciate Phyllis because she checks in with me often to see how my granddaughter's doing. Also, she also provides me with referrals and information to help my granddaughter because oftentimes parents don't know what to do or grandparents don't know what to do, but they know that their child is spiraling out of control. And so, you know, and sometimes that control can lead them into the into trouble, you know. So I just want to say I appreciate Phyllis and I appreciate the support that she's given me. My daughter, my granddaughter, fortunately, has not gotten into trouble, but there's always that possibility because she's not able to manage her emotions. And so, you know, I just want to say I appreciate Phyllis and the kind of support that she gives even to friends and community and associates. So thank you, Phyllis.
You're welcome. And I want to make sure that the listening audience, the listening people that's listening, I suffer from mental illness as a during my formative years in my adult life, but I have recovered from mental illness. I don't suffer from it anymore, but I had to go to extensive treatment. I got the right treatment. I had the right therapist. I had the right doctor. I had the right treatment plan in place. And I have overcome my mental illness, you know. But living the family I live with, boy, they were something else. I had to divorce him. That was part of my mental illness. But I've been through it psychologically, and I know what you deal with when you go through mental illness. So I'm not just sitting up here talking about mental illness. I was a consumer. And I prayed for God to get my mind set, you know, and he did. My mind is razor sharp like Muhammad Ali in the ring. That's how I feel with my mindset today. It's all about changing your mindset, getting the right proper help, the treatment, somebody care for you. Not somebody you're talking to on the couch getting your money by the hour, you know, when waiting for you to get on out and get the next customer, next client in there. So when anybody's looking for a good therapist, do your research. When you're looking for a good psychiatrist, do your research, okay? I mean, I had one of the best, and I was blessed.
Yeah, and I would say if one doesn't work, keep searching. Don't give up.
Yeah.
Don't give up on the system that have highly trained people that are there to help you.
There's some good people out there. There's some excellent people out there. James have a lot of people that have their PhD, master's and whatnot, and Fathers and Families Coalition of America. One of the person I could think of is Dr. Curtis. She has that informed care training. You guys should look her up. She's good. Help you deal with traumatic experience in your life. Her name is Dr. Curtis. James, you might want to give us some information on her.
Well, we give every year we have a trauma-informed care certification program at our national conference, and every summer in the month of July and August, I run a series on, and we've done it in April too, but we've moved it back to July and August, both in person and webinars on trauma-informed care models, how early childhood educators, Head Start, and community-based workers can use strategies, and one happens to, well, there's three that we use. One is Seeking Safety, and the other one is Mind Matters by Dr. Carolyn Curtis Rich, or Carolyn Rich Curtis in Sacramento, California. Her program was picked up by the Dibble Institute and is going towards what they call an evidence-based intervention model. It's phenomenal, it's simple, and she's an awesome person as well, and she was one of our featured talk speakers at our 20th annual conference. And so you can find her by Googling her, or you can also go to our website because she's one of our senior advisors, and that's at fathersandfamiliescoalition.org.
And James, go ahead. Now, before we're off the air, let them know that your next conference date in, for 2020?
Well, we're going to do a mid-year programming in September in Indianapolis. Next month we're going to do something in New York. And that's probably it for besides some virtual webinars throughout the year. Also one in Orange County in June, which I will have more information coming with our affiliate, the Raise Foundation, wants us to be collaborators in an event in June. And it'll be in Newport Beach at Hope Hospital. I don't have an address. But after that, our 21st annual conference will be at the Hilton Los Angeles Airport in the city of Los Angeles, February 24th to the 27th. We'd like to try to get added volunteers, private investors to get in support, and also make it a place for year-round internships with MSW and BSW students and other students as well. So now that we're a certified continuing education approved provider for the state of California, I think it's also another place where people can come and get a benefit.
Great. And James has given you his website, and I know I have it up on anybody that, even if you go to the American Health Crisis Blog Talk Radio for this program, his website is up there. And then, Phyllis, what I'm going to do is edit it and make sure yours is up there also.
Thank you.
So that they can, you know, refer back to those websites. For those that have been listening, you've been on American Health Crisis through Blog Talk Radio. Your host, Colette Young, and a host of guests have been on that. Hopefully you'll embrace what they're doing and become a part of it. And we've been talking about mental illness in the prison. Phyllis McNeil already have a Straight Talk program that deals with the mentally ill when they're coming out of the prison. Now, do you have a program that deals with the mentally ill so they don't go into the prison? Or is this
yes, I have that too.
Oh,
I have that set up, and when they don't go into prison or haven't set their feet in the prison ground, I send them to resources in the community. Yes.
Okay, good. And then Selena, you're with Sowing Seeds for Life, which is the second largest food bank in Southern California. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we'll do that real quickly. Sowing Seeds for Life, you can go to www.sowingseedsforlifestruggleforallthewayout.org. We're located at 1350 Arrow Highway. What we do is we do a lot more than food. We do numerous different programs for teenagers. We probably have over 400 volunteers that come out there. We supply clothes, shoes, whatever it is that we have to the community 100% free on the first and third Wednesday of every month. Also, Paulette Young is there. She does healthcare consultants and what she's doing right now on the radio, trying to help the public understand many things about health. So if you'd like to donate, volunteer, or just come out there, if you want to donate, please call Fran Robinson at area code 909-293-7735, extension 232. Again, that number is area code 909-293-7735, extension 232.
Okay, we have 5 more minutes on the air. Anybody want to talk, or Phyllis or James or...
Well, I just want to say something. I want to say something, the reason why they call me the Dragon Slayer. As the founder of the Straight Talk program, I must see to it that the circle of community love and support is not broken. Each of us makes the journey through life with our own obstacles and sticking points. The difference is how we face our own personal monster. Do we run and hide from the cruel beasts, or do we become a dragon slayer? My purpose in life is building generations of dragon slayers, because your cruel beast can be yourself, it can be your boss, it could be you just being in denial who you are as a person. So you call your own shot. Yeah.
That's why they call me the dragon slayer.
This is Arcadio. Real quick, anybody wants to know more about my personal life, it's in a book along with 10 others. It's called Men Built for Others, and the proceeds from the book are going to put a low-income kid through college.
Wow.
You got a website?
You want to repeat that, the name of the book?
The name is Men Built for Others. You can find it on Amazon.com.
We have 3 more minutes. Anyone else want to have a closing saying?
Yes, this is Teresa. I applaud a woman who is helping her granddaughter, and I encourage anyone who has a young person, particularly under the age of 18, to get them in programs and sign your name on the dotted line so that you can be accountable and so that you can be an advocate for that person. Because once they turn 18, the system will not even tell you what they're giving your child, what they're doing to your child, what the conditions are that your child is living in, or they won't tell you anything unless the child gives them permission. And if your child, like mine, was 18 at the time that he was stricken with the illness, they decide they don't want to tell anybody anything, and there's nothing you can do. So I encourage you, if you have someone who has a mental illness, do the best you can to get them to sign the line to give you the information, because that's the only way I was able to help my son. I was able to get him to sign the paperwork, to say that it was okay to talk to me. That's so important, because otherwise the medical system, the prison system, nobody will tell you anything. And that's a horrible feeling. You have to go through the courts to get that permission, and that's what I eventually had to do. It's a long process, and it's painful.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing, Teresa and James and Selena and Phyllis.
Thank you, Teresa.
We need to. And then the young man that spoke about his time in prison, I just want to thank you for being able to come on the program and share, because there'll be thousands of others worldwide that will benefit from the information that was given. And thank you, James, who is the CEO of Fathers and Family Coalition of America, and all those that are involved with that awesome organization that's national, not just here in America. Okay, we'll be on next week, same time, with a different topic. We're on every Monday at 8 p.m. Pacific time. And if you want to be able to share or say something, you have to dial the number 858-769-4936, press 1, and you'll be on the air around the world. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Paulette. Faduma, I just was listening.
Hi, Dr. Faduma. Yeah, the program's going to end in about less than a minute.
They said, yeah, so many beautiful, important things, information, you know. We appreciate that. Thank you for it. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.